Chapter 17. Kaol knew Selena was in a foul mood without even having to speak to her. Actually, he hadn't dared speak to her since before the ball had started, other than to position her outside the patio, hidden in the shadows of a pillar. A few hours in the winter night would cool her down. From his spot inside, tucked into an alcove near the servants' entrance, he could keep an eye on the glittering ball in front of him, as well as the assassin standing watch just outside the towering balcony doors. Not that he didn't trust her, but having Selena in one of these moods always set him on edge, too. She was currently leaning against the pillar, arms crossed, not hiding in the shadows as he'd told her to. He could see the tendrils of her breath curling in the night air, and the moonlight glinting off the hilt of one of the daggers she wore at her side. The ballroom had been decorated in hues of white and glacier blue, with swaths of silk floating from the ceiling and ornate glass baubles hanging between. It was something out of a winter dream, and it was in honor of Holland, of all people. A few hours of entertainment and a small fortune spent for a boy who was currently sulking on his little glass throne, shoveling sweets down his throat as his mother smiled at him. He'd never tell Dorian, but Kaol dreaded the day when Holland would grow into a man. A spoiled child was easy enough to deal with, but a spoiled, cruel leader would be another matter entirely. He hoped that between him and Dorian, they could check whatever corruption was already rotting away in Holland's heart, once Dorian ascended to the throne. The heir was on the dance floor, fulfilling his obligation to court and crown by dancing with whatever ladies demanded his attention, which, not surprisingly, was almost all of them. Dorian played his role well and smiled throughout the waltzes, a graceful and competent partner, never one complaining or turning any lady away. The dance finished, Dorian bowed to his partner, and before he could take one step, another courtier was curtsying in front of him. If Kaol had been in Dorian's shoes, he would have winced, but the prince just grinned, took the lady's hand, and swept her around the floor. Kaol glanced outside again, and straightened. Selena wasn't by the pillar. He stifled a snarl. Tomorrow they were going to have a nice long chat about the rules and the consequences of abandoning posts while on guard duty. A rule that he was also breaking, he realized, as he slipped from the alcove and out the door that had been left ajar to allow fresh air into the toasty ballroom. Where in hell had she gone? Perhaps she'd actually seen some sign of trouble. Not that there'd ever been an attack on the palace, and not that anyone would ever be foolish enough to try during a royal ball. But he still put a hand on the hilt of his sword as he approached the columns at the top of the stairs, leading down into the frosted garden. She'd been standing right here, and Kaol spotted her. Well, she'd certainly abandoned her post, but not to face some potential threat. Kaol crossed his arms. Selena had left her post to dance. The music was loud enough that it reached them out here, and at the foot of the steps, Selena waltzed with herself. She even held the edge of her dark cloak in one hand as if it were the skirts of a ball gown, her other hand poised on the arm of an invisible partner. He didn't know if he should laugh, yell, or just go back inside and pretend he'd never seen it. She turned, an elegant sweeping motion that brought her to face him, and halted. Well, the last option was no longer a possibility. Laughter or yelling, then. Though neither felt appropriate now. Even in the moonlight, he could see her scowl. "I'm bored to tears and nearly dead with cold," she said, dropping her cloak. He remained atop the stairs, watching her. "And it's your fault," she went on, stuffing her hands into her pockets. "You made me come out here, and someone left the balcony door open so I could hear all that lovely music." The waltz was still playing, filling the frozen air around them with sound. "So you should really reconsider who's to blame. It was like putting a starving man in front of a feast and telling him not to eat. Which, by the way, you actually did when you made me go to that state dinner." She was babbling, and her face was dark enough for him to know she was beyond mortified that he'd caught her. He bit his lip to keep from smiling, and walked down the four steps to the gravel path of the garden. "You're the greatest assassin in Aurelia, and yet you can't stand watch for a few hours?" "What's there to watch?" she hissed. "Couples sneaking out to fondle each other between the hedges? or His Royal Highness dancing with every eligible maiden. You're jealous? She barked a laugh. No, gods, no. But I can't say it's particularly fun to watch him, or watch any of them enjoying themselves. I think I'm more jealous of that giant buffet no one is even touching. He chuckled and glanced up the stairs, to the patio and the ballroom doors beyond. He should be back inside already. But here he was, towing that line he couldn't stay away from. He'd managed to stay on this side of it last night, even though seeing her cry during Rena Goldsmith's song had stirred him so bone deep it was like he'd found a part of him he hadn't even realized was missing. He'd made them run an extra mile this morning, not to punish her for it, but because he couldn't stop thinking about the way she'd looked at him. She sighed loudly and studied the moon. It was so bright it drowned out the stars. I heard the music and I just wanted to dance for a few minutes. To just forget everything for one waltz and pretend to be a normal girl. So, she glared at him now, go ahead and snarl and snap at me about it. What will my punishment be? 3 extra miles tomorrow? An hour of drills? The wreck? There was a sort of bleak bitterness in her words that didn't sit well with him. And yes, they would have a conversation about abandoning posts. But right now, Kaol stepped up to the line. Dance with me, he said, and held out his hand to her. Selena stared at Kaol's outstretched hand. What? The moonlight caught in his golden eyes, setting them shining. What didn't you understand? Nothing, everything, because when he'd said it, it hadn't been the way Dorian had asked her to dance at the Yulmus Ball. That had merely been an invitation. But this... His hand remained reaching toward her. As far as I recall, she said, lifting her chin, at Yulmus I asked you to dance and you flat out refused me. You said it was too dangerous for us to be seen dancing together. Things are different now. Again, another layered statement she couldn't begin to sort through now. Her throat tightened, and she looked at his extended hand, flecked with calluses and scars. Dance with me, Selena, he said again, his voice rough. When her eyes found his, she forgot about the cold, and the moon, and the glass palace looming above them. The secret library and the king's plans and Mort and Elena faded into nothing. She took his hand, and there was only the music and Kaol. His fingers were warm even through his gloves. He slid his other hand around her waist as she braced one of hers on his arm. She looked up at him when he began to move. A slow step, then another, and another, easing into the steady rhythm of the waltz. He stared back at her, neither of them smiling, somehow beyond smiling at that moment. The waltz built, louder, faster, and Kaol steered her into it, never stumbling. Her breathing turned uneven, but she couldn't look away from him, couldn't stop dancing. The moonlight and the garden and the golden glow from the ballroom blurred together, now miles away. We'll never be a normal boy and girl, will we? She managed to say.
No,
he breathed, eyes blazing.
We won't.
And then the music exploded around them, and Kaol took her with it, spinning her so that her cloak fanned out around her. Each step was flawless, lethal, like that first time they'd sparred together so many months ago. She knew his every move, and he knew hers, as though they'd been dancing this waltz together all their lives. Faster, never faltering, never breaking her stare. The rest of the world quieted into nothing. In that moment, after 10 long years, Selena looked at Kaol and realized she was home. Dorian Havilliard stood at the ballroom window, watching Selena and Kaol dance in the garden beyond, their dark cloaks flowing around them like they were no more than 2 wraiths spinning through the wind. After hours of dancing, he'd finally managed to get free of the ladies demanding his attention, and had come to the window to get some much-needed fresh air. He'd intended to go outside, but then he'd seen them. That had been enough to still his steps, but not enough to make him walk away. He knew he should. He should walk away and pretend he hadn't seen it, because even though it was just a dance. Someone stepped beside him, and he glanced over in time to see Nehemia stop at the window. After months of being scarce around the court due to the rebel massacre in Ilway, she'd made an appearance tonight. She was resplendent in a cobalt gown with gold thread accents, her hair coiled and braided in a coronet atop her head. Her delicate golden earrings glittered in the light of the chandelier, drawing his eye to her elegant neck. Nehemia was easily the most stunning woman in the ballroom, and he hadn't failed to notice how many men, and women, had been watching her all night. "Don't cause trouble for them," she said quietly, her accent still thick, but much improved since she'd arrived in Rifthold. Dorian raised an eyebrow. Nehemia traced an invisible pattern on the glass pane. "You and I, we will always stand apart. We will always have..." She searched for the word. "Responsibilities. We will always have burdens that no one else can ever understand, that they..." She inclined her head toward Kaol and Selena. "Will never understand. And if they did, then they would not want them." "They would not want us, is what you mean." Kaol spun Selena, and she flowed smoothly through the air before snapping back into his arms. "I've already decided to move on," Dorian said with equal quiet. It was the truth. He'd awoken this morning feeling lighter than he had in weeks. Nehemia nodded, the gold and jewels in her hair twinkling. "Then I thank you for that." She traced another symbol on the window. "Your cousin, Roland, told me that your father has approved Councilman Mullison's plans to swell Calicala's ranks, to expand the labor camp to accommodate more people." He kept his face blank. There were far too many eyes on them. "Roland told you that?" Nehemia lowered her hand from the window. "He wants me to tell my father that I support his agenda, to get my father to make the expansion as easy as possible. I refused. He says there's a council meeting tomorrow where they will vote on Mollison's plans. I'm not allowed to attend." Dorian focused on his breathing. "Roland had no right to do that, any of it." "Would you stop it, then?" Her dark eyes were fixed on his face. "Speak to your father at the council meeting. Convince the others to say no." No one except for Selena dared speak to him like that. But her boldness had nothing to do with his response, as Dorian said. "I can't." His face warmed as the words came out. But it was true. He couldn't tackle Calicala, not without causing a lot of trouble for both himself and Nehemia. He'd already convinced his father to leave Nehemia alone. Demanding he shut down Calicala could force him to choose sides and make a choice that could destroy everything he had. "You can't or you will not." Dorian sighed, but she cut him off. "If Selena were shipped to Calicala, would you free her? Would you put a stop to the camp? When you took her from Endovir, did you think twice about the thousands you left behind?" He had, but not for as long as he should have. "Innocents work and die in Calicala and Endovir, by the thousands. Ask Selena about the graves they dig there, Prince. Look at the scars on her back, and realize that what she went through is a blessing compared to what most endure." Perhaps he'd just gotten used to her accent, but he could have sworn she was speaking more clearly. Nehemia pointed at the garden, at Selena and Kaol, who had stopped dancing and were talking now. "If she was sent back, would you free her?" "Of course I would," he said carefully. "But it's complicated."
"There is nothing complicated. It is the difference between right and wrong. The slaves in those camps have people who love them just as much as you loved my friend."
He glanced around them. Ladies were eagerly watching from behind their fans, and even his mother had noticed their lengthy conversation. Outside, Selena had resumed her post by the pillar. At the other end of the room, Kaol slipped through one of the patio doors and took up his spot in an alcove, his face blank, as if the dance had never happened. This isn't the place for this conversation.
Nehemia stared at him for a long moment before nodding.
You have power in you, Prince. More power than you realize.
She touched his chest, tracing a symbol there too, and some of the court ladies gasped. But Nehemia's eyes were locked on his.
It sleeps, she whispered, tapping his heart. In here. When the time comes, when it awakens, do not be afraid.
She removed her hand and gave him a sad smile.
When it is time, I will help you.
With that, she walked away, the courtiers parting, then swallowing up her wake. He stared after the princess, wondering what her last words had meant, and why, when she had said them, something ancient and slumbering deep inside of him had opened an eye. Chapter 18. Selena sat in the parlor of Archer's townhouse, frowning at the crackling fireplace. She hadn't touched the tea the butcher had laid out for her on the low-lying marble table, though she'd certainly indulged in 2 cream puffs and 1 chocolate tort while waiting for Archer to return. She could have come back later, but it was freezing outside, and after standing on guard duty last night, she was exhausted, and in need of anything to distract her from reliving that dance with Kaol. After the waltz had finished, he'd merely told her that if she abandoned her post again, he'd break a hole through the ice in the trout pond and toss her in. And then, as though he hadn't just danced with her in a way that made her knees tremble, he stalked back inside and left her to suffer in the cold. He hadn't even mentioned the dance this morning during their run. Maybe she'd just imagined the whole thing. Maybe the frigid night air had made her stupid. She'd been distracted during her first word marks lesson with Nehemia that morning, and had earned a fair amount of scolding as a result. She blamed the complex, near-nonsensical language. She'd learned a few languages before, enough to get by in places where Otterland's language laws hadn't taken root. But word marks were completely different. Trying to learn them while also trying to unravel the labyrinth that was Kaol Westfall was impossible. Selena heard the front door open. Muffled words, hurried footsteps, and then Archer's beautiful face popped in. Just give me a moment to freshen up. She stood. That won't be necessary. This won't take long. Archer's green eyes glimmered, but he slipped into the parlor, shutting the mahogany door behind him. Sit, she told him, not particularly caring that this was his house. Archer obeyed, taking a seat in the armchair across from the couch. His face was flushed from the cold, making his lovely eyes seem even greener. She crossed her legs. If your butler doesn't stop listening at the keyhole, I'm going to cut off his ears and shove them down his throat. There was a muffled cough, followed by retreating footsteps. Once she was sure no one else was listening, she leaned back into the couch cushions. I need more than a list of names. I need to know what exactly they're planning, and how much they know about the king. Archer's face paled.
I need more time, Selena.
You have little more than 3 weeks left.
Give me 5.
The king only gave me a month to kill you. I already have a hard time convincing everyone you're a difficult target. I can't give you more time.
But I need it to wrap up things here in Rifthold, and to get you more information. With Davis dead, they're all being extra careful. No one is talking. No one dares whisper anything.
Do they know Davis was a mistake?
Mistakes happen often enough in Rifthold for us to know that most of them are anything but mistakes.
He ran his hands through his hair. Please, just a little more time.
I don't have any to give you. I need more than names, Archer.
What about the Crown Prince and the Captain of the Guard? Perhaps they have the information you need.
You're close with both of them, aren't you? She bared her teeth at him.
What do you know about them?
Archer gave her a steady, calculating look. You think I didn't recognize the Captain of the Guard the day you just happened to run into me outside of the willows?
His attention flicked to her side, where her hand currently rested on a dagger.
Have you told them about your plan to keep me alive?
No, she said, her grip on the dagger relaxing. No, I haven't. I don't want to involve them.
Or is it because you don't actually trust either of them?
She shot to her feet. Don't presume to know anything about me, Archer.
She stalked to the door and flung it open. The butler was nowhere to be seen. She looked over her shoulder at Archer, whose eyes were wide as he watched her.
You have until the end of the week. 6 days to get me more information. If you don't give me anything by then, my next visit won't be nearly as pleasant.
Not giving him the time to reply, she stormed out of the room, grabbed her cloak from the front closet, and strode back out onto the icy city streets. The maps and figures in front of Dorian had to be wrong. Someone had to be playing a joke, because there was no way Calicala had this many slaves. Seated at the long table in his father's council chamber, Dorian glanced at the men around him. None looked surprised. None looked upset. Councilman Mullison, who had taken a special interest in Calicala, was practically beaming. He should have fought to get Nehemia into this council meeting, but there was probably nothing she could say right now that would have any impact on a decision that had clearly already been made. His father was smiling faintly at Roland, his head propped on a fist. The black ring on the king's hand glinted in the dim light from the beastly fireplace, that mouth-shaped hearth that seemed poised to devour the room. From his spot beside Parrington, Roland gestured to the map. Another black ring glinted on Roland's hand, the same as the one Parrington wore, too. As you can see, Calicala can't support the current number of slaves. There are too many to even fit in the mines as it is, and though we have them digging for new deposits, the work has been stagnant. Roland smiled. But, slightly to the north, right along the southern edge of Oakwald, our men have discovered an iron deposit that seems to cover a large area. It's close enough to Calicala that we could erect a few new buildings to house additional guards and overseers, bring in even more slaves if we want, and start work on it right away. Impressed murmurs and a nod from his father to Roland made Dorian's jaw clench. 3 matching rings. 3 black rings to signify, what, that they were bound in some way to each other? How had Roland gotten past his father's and Parrington's defenses so quickly? Because of his support of a place like Calicala? Nehemia's words from the night before kept ringing in his head. He'd seen the scars on Selena's back up close, a brutal mess of flesh that made him sick with rage to look at. How many like her were rotting away in these labor camps? And where will the slaves sleep? Dorian suddenly asked. Will you build shelter for them, too? Everyone, including his father, turned to look at him, but Roland just shrugged. They're slaves. Why shelter them when they can sleep in the mines? Then we wouldn't waste time bringing them in and out every day. More murmurs and nods. Dorian stared at Roland. If we have a surplus of slaves, then why not let some of them go? Surely they're not all rebels and criminals. A growl from down the table. His father. Watch your tongue, prince. Not a father to his son, but a king to his heir. Still, that icy rage was growing, and he kept seeing Selena's scars, her too thin body the day they'd pulled her out of Endovier, her gaunt face, and the hope and desperation mingling in her eyes. He heard Nehemia's words. What she went through is a blessing compared to what most endure. Dorian peered down the table at his father, whose face was dark with irritation. Is this the plan? Now that we've conquered the continent, you'll throw everyone into Calicala or Endovier, until there's no one left in the kingdoms but people from Otterlin? Silence. The rage dragged him down to the place where he'd felt that flicker of ancient power when Nehemia had touched his heart. You keep tightening the leash, and it's going to snap, Dorian said to his father, then looked across the table to Roland and Mullison. How about you spend a year in Calicala? And when you're done, you two can sit here and tell me about your plans for expansion. His father slammed his hands on the table, rattling the glasses and pitchers. You will mind your mouth, Prince, or you will be thrown out of this room before the vote. Dorian shot out of his seat. Nehemia had been right. He hadn't looked at the others in Endovier.
He hadn't let himself. "I've heard enough," he snarled at his father, at Roland and Mullison, at Parrington, and at all the lords and men in the room. "You want my vote? Then here it is. No, not in 1,000 years. His father growled, but Dorian was already walking across the red marble floor, past that horrible fireplace, out the doors, and into the bright halls of the glass castle. He didn't know where he was going, only that he felt freezing cold, a cold that fueled the calm, glittering rage. He took flight after flight of stairs down into the stone castle, then long hallways and narrow staircases, until he found a forgotten hall where there were no eyes to see him as he drew back his fist and punched the wall. The stone cracked under his hand. Not a small crack, but a spiderweb that kept growing and growing toward the window on the right until the window exploded, glass showering everywhere as Dorian dropped into a crouch and covered his head. Air rushed in, so cold his eyes blurred, but he just knelt there, fingers in his hair, breathing, breathing, breathing as the anger ebbed out of him. It wasn't possible. Maybe he'd just hit the wall in the wrong spot, and the damn thing was so ancient that it had only been waiting for something like this to happen. He'd never heard of stone cracking that way, spreading out like a living thing. And then the window. Heart racing, Dorian lowered his hands from his head and looked at them. There wasn't a bruise or a cut, or even a trace of pain. But he'd hit that wall as hard as he could. He could have, should have, broken his hand. Yet his knuckles were unharmed, only white from gripping his fingers in a tight fist. On trembling legs, Dorian rose and surveyed the damage. The wall had splintered but remained intact. The ancient window, however, had shattered completely. And around him, around where he had crouched, a perfect circle, clean of debris, as if the glass and wood had showered everything but him. It wasn't possible, because magic. Magic. Dorian dropped to his knees and was violently sick. Curled on the couch beside Kaol, Selena took a sip of her tea and frowned. "Can't you hire a servant like Philippa so we can have someone bring us treats?" Kaol raised an eyebrow. "Don't you ever stay in your own rooms anymore?" No, not if she could help it. Not with Elena and Mort and all that nonsense just a secret door away. Ordinarily, she might have sought sanctuary in the library, but not now. Not when the library held so many secrets it made her head spin to think about them. For a moment, she wondered if Nehemia had discovered anything about the riddle in Davis's office. She'd have to ask her tomorrow. She kicked Kaol in the ribs with a sock-covered foot. "All I'm saying is that I'd like some chocolate cake every now and then." He closed his eyes. "And an apple tart, and a loaf of bread, and a pot of stew, and a mountain of cookies, and a..." He chuckled as she put her foot against his face and pushed. He grabbed her foot and wouldn't let go when she tried yanking her leg back. "It's true, and you know it, Lena." "So what if it is? Haven't I earned the right to eat as much as I want whenever I want?" She wrenched her foot out of his grasp as the smile faded from his face. "Yes," he said quietly, his voice barely audible over the crackling fire. "You have." After a few moments of silence, he stood up and walked to the door. She sat up on her elbows. "Where are you going?" He opened the door. "To get you chocolate cake." When he returned, and after they'd both eaten half of the cake he'd swiped from the kitchens, Selena lay back on the couch, a hand on her full belly. Kaol was already sprawled across the cushions, sleeping soundly. Staying up until the middle of the night at the ball, then awakening for their sunrise run this morning, had been exhausting. Why hadn't he just canceled the run? "You know, the courts weren't always like this," Nehemia had said. "There was a time when people valued honor and loyalty, when serving a ruler wasn't about obedience and fear. Do you think another court like that could ever rise again?" Selena hadn't given Nehemia an answer. She hadn't wanted to talk about it. But looking at Kaol now, at the man he was, and the man he was still becoming.
Yes, she thought. Yes, Nehemia, it could rise again, if we could find more men like him.
But not in a world with this king, she realized. He'd crush a court like that before Nehemia could muster one. If the king were gone, then the court that Nehemia dreamed of could change the world. That court could undo the damage of a decade of brutality and terror. It could restore the lands ravaged by conquest, and renew the hearts of the kingdoms that shattered when Otterlin marched in.
And in that world, Selena swallowed hard.
She and Kaol would never be a normal boy and girl, but perhaps in that world they could make a life of their own. She wanted that life, because even though he'd pretended nothing had happened after the dance they'd shared last night, something had. And maybe it had taken her this long to realize it, but this man, she wanted that life with him. The world Nehemia dreamed about, and the world Selena sometimes dared let herself consider, was nothing more than a shred of hope and a memory of what the kingdoms had once been. But perhaps the rebel movement truly knew about the king's plans and how to ruin them, how to destroy them, with or without Elaine Galathinius and whatever army they claimed she was raising. Selena sighed and eased off the couch, gently shifting Kaol's leg so she didn't disturb him. She turned back, though, just once, leaning down to brush her fingers through his short hair, then graze them along his cheek. Then she quietly slipped from his room, taking the remnants of the chocolate cake with her. She was wondering whether eating the rest of the chocolate cake would make her severely sick when she turned down her hallway and spotted Dorian sitting on the floor outside her rooms. He looked over when he saw her, his eyes going to the cake in her hands. Selena blushed and lifted her chin. They hadn't spoken since their argument over Roland. Perhaps he'd come to apologize. Served him right. But as she neared and Dorian got to his feet, she took one look at the expression in his sapphire eyes and knew he wasn't here for an apology.
"It's a bit late for a visit," she said by way of greeting.
Dorian put his hands in his pockets and leaned against the wall. His face was pale, his eyes haunted, but he gave her half a smile. "It's a bit late for chocolate cake, too. Been raiding the kitchens." She remained outside her rooms, running an eye over him. He looked fine, no bruises, no signs of injury. Yet something was off.
"What are you doing here?"
He avoided her gaze. "I was looking for Nehemia, but her servant said she was out. I thought they meant here. Then I thought you two might be out for a stroll."
"I haven't seen her since this morning. Is there something you want from her?"
Dorian took a ragged breath, and Selena suddenly realized just how cold it was in the hallway.
How long had he been sitting here on the freezing floor?
"No," he said, shaking his head as if convincing himself of something. "No, there isn't." He began walking away. She started speaking before she knew she'd opened her mouth. "Dorian, what's wrong?" He turned. For a heartbeat, there was something in his eyes that reminded her of a world long since burned, a glimmer of color and power that still stalked the edges of her nightmares. But he blinked, and it was gone.
"Nothing. There's nothing wrong at all."
He strode away, hands still in his pockets. "Enjoy your cake," he said over his shoulder, and then was gone.
Chapter 19. Kaol stood before the king's throne, almost boring himself to tears as he gave yesterday's report. He tried not to think about last night, how the brief touch of Selena's fingers through his hair and on his face had sent a pang of desire through him so strong he'd wanted to grab her and pin her on the couch. It had taken all of his self-control to keep his breathing steady, to keep pretending that he was asleep. After she'd left, his heart had been pounding so hard it took him an hour to calm enough to actually sleep. Looking at the king now, Kaol was glad he'd controlled himself. The line between him and Selena was there for a reason. Crossing it would call into question his loyalty to the king before him, not to mention the way it would impact his friendship with Dorian.
The prince had made himself scarce this past week. Kaol would have to make a point today to go see him. Dorian and the king were where his loyalty lay. Without his loyalty, he was no one. Without it, he'd given up his family, his title, for nothing. Kaol finished explaining his security plans for the carnival that would arrive today, and the king nodded.
Very well, captain. Make sure your men watch the castle grounds, too. I know what sort of filth likes to travel with these carnivals, and I don't want them wandering around.
Kaol bowed his head. Consider it done.
Normally, the king would dismiss him with a grunt and a wave. But today, the man merely studied him, an elbow propped on the arm of his glass throne. After a moment of silence, during which Kaol wondered if a castle spy had somehow been looking through the keyhole when Selena touched him, the king spoke.
Princess Nehemia needs to be watched.
Of all the things the king could have said, this was not what Kaol had expected. But he kept his face blank and did not question the words that implied so much.
Her influence is starting to be felt in these halls, and I am beginning to wonder if perhaps the time has come to remove her back to Ilway. I know that we already have some men watching her, but I also received word that there was an anonymous threat on her life.
Questions roared through him, along with a rising sense of dread. Who had threatened her? What had Nehemia said or done to warrant the threat? Kaol stiffened.
I haven't heard anything about that.
The king smiled.
No one has. Not even the princess herself. It seems she's made some enemies outside the palace as well.
I'll have extra guards watch her rooms and patrol her wing of the castle. I'll alert her immediately of...
There is no need to alert her. Or anyone.
The king gave him a pointed look.
She might try to use the fact that someone wants her dead as a bargaining chip. Might try to make herself into a martyr of sorts. So tell your men to stay quiet.
He didn't think Nehemia would do that, but Kaol kept his mouth shut. He'd tell his men to be discreet. And he wouldn't tell the princess, or Selena. Just because he was friendly with Nehemia, just because she was Selena's friend, it didn't change anything. While he knew that Selena would be furious that he didn't tell her, he was the captain of the guard. He had fought and sacrificed nearly as much as Selena had to get to this position. He'd let her get too close by asking her to dance. He'd let himself get too close.
Captain?
Kaol blinked, then bowed low.
You have my word, Your Majesty.
Dorian panted, swinging the sword through the air in a precise parry that sent the guard scrambling. His third match, and his third opponent about to go down. He hadn't slept last night, nor had he been able to sit still this morning. So he'd come to the barracks, hoping to have someone wear him down enough for exhaustion to take over. He parried and deflected the guard's assault. It had to be a mistake. Maybe he'd dreamed it all up. Maybe it had just been a combination of the right elements at the wrong time. Magic was gone, and there was no reason that he should have that power, when not even his father had been gifted with magic. Magic had been dormant in the Havilyard bloodline for generations. Dorian got past the guard's defense in an easy maneuver, though when the young man raised his hands in defeat, the prince had to wonder if he'd let him win. The thought sent a growl rippling through him. He was about to demand another match when someone sauntered over to them.
Mind if I join?
Dorian stared at Roland, whose rapier looked like it had hardly ever been used. The guard took one look at Dorian's face, bowed, and found someplace else to be. Dorian watched his cousin, the black ring on Roland's finger.
I don't think you want to dance with me today, cousin.
Ah, Roland said, frowning.
About yesterday. I'm sorry for that. Had I known the labor camps were such a sensitive matter for you, I never would have broached the subject or worked with Counselor Mollison. I called off the vote after you left. Mollison was furious.
Dorian raised his brows.
Oh?
Roland shrugged. You were right. I don't know anything about what it's like in those camps. I only took up the cause because Parrington suggested that I work with Mollison,
who stood to gain a lot from the expansion because of his ties to the iron industry.
And I'm supposed to believe you.
Roland gave him a winning smile. We are family, after all.
Family.
Dorian had never really considered himself to be in an actual family, and certainly not now. If anyone found out about what had happened in that hallway yesterday, about the magic he might have, his father would kill him. He had a second son, after all. Families weren't exactly supposed to think like that, were they? Dorian had gone looking for Nehemia last night out of desperation. But in the light of morning, he was grateful he hadn't seen her. If the princess had that sort of information about him, she could use it to her advantage, blackmail him all she wanted. And Roland... Dorian began walking away.
Why don't you save your maneuvering for someone who cares?
Roland kept pace beside him. Ah, but who else is more worthy than my own cousin? What greater challenge than winning you over to my schemes?
Dorian shot him a warning glare and found the young man grinning.
If only you'd seen the chaos that erupted after you left, Roland went on. As long as I live, I'll never forget the look on your father's face when you growled at them all.
Roland laughed, and despite himself, Dorian found a smile tugging on his lips.
I thought the old bastard would combust right there.
Dorian shook his head. He's hanged men for calling him such names, you know.
Yes, but when you're as handsome as I am, dear cousin, you'd be surprised by how much more you can get away with.
Dorian rolled his eyes, but considered his cousin for a few moments. Roland might be close with Parrington and his father, but perhaps he'd just been pulled into Parrington's schemes and needed someone to steer him right. And if his father and the other councilmen thought that they could use Roland to win support for their dark dealings, well, then it was time for Dorian to play the game, too. He could turn his father's pawn against him. Between the two of them, surely they could sway enough of the council to oppose more unsavory proposals.
You really called off the vote? Roland waved a hand. I think you're right, that we're pushing our luck with the other kingdoms. If we want to keep control, we need to find a balance. Shoving them into slavery won't help. It might just turn more people toward rebellion.
Dorian nodded slowly and paused. I have somewhere to be, he lied, sheathing his sword. But perhaps I'll see you in the hall for dinner.
Roland gave him an easy smile. I'll try to muster up a few lovely ladies to keep us company.
Dorian waited until Roland was around the corner before heading outside, where the chaos of the courtyard sucked him up. The carnival his mother had commissioned for Holland, her belated Yulemas present to him, had finally arrived. It was not a massive carnival. Only a few black tents, a dozen cage wagons, and 5 covered wagons had been set up in the open courtyard. The whole thing felt rather somber, despite the fiddler sawing away, and the merry shouts of the workers scrambling to finish setting up the tents in time to surprise Holland that evening. People hardly looked Dorian's way as he meandered through the throng. Then again, he was dressed in sweaty old clothes and had his cloak wrapped tightly around him. Only the guards, highly trained and aware of everything, noticed him. But they understood his need for anonymity without being told. A stunningly beautiful woman walked out of one of the tents. Blonde, slender, tall, and dressed in fine riding clothes. A mountain-sized man also emerged, carrying long poles of iron that Dorian doubted most men could even lift. Dorian passed by one of the large covered wagons, pausing at the words written in white paint on its side. The Carnival of Mirrors. See illusions and reality collide. He frowned. Had his mother even put a moment's consideration into the gift, into how it might appear, the message it would send? Carnivals, with their illusions and tricks, always pushed the limit of outright treason. Dorian snorted. Perhaps he belonged in one of these cages. A hand landed on his shoulder, and Dorian whirled to find Kaol smiling at him.
I thought I'd find you here.
He wasn't surprised in the least that Kaol had recognized him. Dorian was about to smile back when he noticed who was with the captain. Selena was standing at one of the covered cages, listening through the black velvet curtains to whatever was inside.
"What are you two doing here so early? The unveiling's not until nightfall."
Nearby, the gargantuan man began hammering foot-long spikes into the frozen earth.
"She wanted a walk, and..."
Kael suddenly gave a violent curse. Dorian didn't particularly want to, but he followed after Kael as he stalked to Selena and yanked her arm away from the black curtain.
"You'll lose your hand like that," the captain warned her, and she glared at him.
Then she gave Dorian a close-lipped smile that felt more like a wince. He hadn't lied to her last night about wanting to see Nehemia, but he'd also found himself wanting to see her, until she appeared with that ridiculous half-eaten cake, which she clearly had plans to devour in private. He couldn't begin to imagine how she'd look at him if she found out he might, he kept telling himself, have some trace of magic within him. Nearby, the beautiful blonde woman perched on a stool and began playing the lute. He knew that the men, and guards, starting to flock to her weren't just there for the lovely music. Kael shifted on his feet, and Dorian realized that they'd been standing there silently, not saying anything. Selena crossed her arms. "Did you find Nehemia last night?" He had a feeling she already knew the answer, but he said, "No, I went back to my room after I saw you." Kael looked at Selena, who merely shrugged. What did that mean? "So," Selena said, surveying the carnival, "do we really have to wait for your brother before we can see what's inside all these cages? Looks like the performers are already starting." And they were. All sorts of jugglers and sword swallowers and fire breathers milled about, while tumblers balanced on impossible things, chair backs, poles, a bed of nails.
"I think this is just practice," Dorian said, and he hoped he was right, because if Holland learned that anyone had started without his approval, Dorian would make sure he was far away from the castle when that tantrum occurred.
"Hmm," Selena said, and walked deeper into the teeming carnival. Kael was watching the prince warily. There were questions in Kael's eyes, questions that Dorian had no intention of answering. So he strode after Selena, because leaving the carnival would feel too much like drawing a line. They made their way to the last and largest wagon, in the rough semicircle of tents and cages.
"Welcome, welcome," shouted an old woman, bent and gnarled with age, from a podium at the foot of its stairs. A crown of stars adorned her silver hair, and though her tanned face was saggy and speckled, there was a spark in her brown eyes. "Look into my mirrors and see the future. Let me examine your palm so I might tell you myself." The old woman pointed with a knotted cane at Selena. "Care to have your fortune told, girl?"
Dorian blinked, then blinked again at the sight of the woman's teeth. They were razor sharp, like a fish's, and made of metal. Of iron. Selena pulled her green cloak tightly around her, but remained staring at the crone. Dorian had heard the legends of the fallen witch kingdom, where bloodthirsty witches had overthrown the peaceful Kraken dynasty and then ripped apart the kingdom stone by stone. 500 years later, songs were still sung of the deadly wars that had left the Iron Teeth clans the only ones standing on a killing field, dead Kraken queens all around them. But the last Kraken queen had cast a spell to ensure that as long as Iron Teeth banners flew, no bit of soil would yield life to them.
"Come into my wagon, dear heart," the old woman crooned at Selena, "and let old Baba Yellowlegs take a look into your future."
Sure enough, peeking out from beneath her brown robe were saffron-colored ankles. Selena's face had drained of color, and Kael went to her side and took her elbow. Despite the way the protective gesture made Dorian's gut twist, he was glad Kael had done it. But this was all just a sham. That woman had probably put on a fake set of iron teeth and sheer yellow stockings, and called herself Baba Yellowlegs to make carnival patrons hand over good coin.
"You're a witch," Selena said, her voice strangled.
She didn't think it was a sham, apparently. No, her face was still white as death.
Gods, was she actually scared?
Baba Yellowlegs laughed, a crow's cackle, and bowed.
The last born witch in the Witch Kingdom.
To Dorian's shock, Selena took a step back, closer to Kaol now, a hand going to the necklace she always wore.
Care to have your fortune read now?
No,
Selena said, almost leaning into Kaol.
Then get out of my way and let me go about my business. I've never seen such a cheap crowd.
Baba Yellowleg snarled and lifted her head to look over them.
Fortunes! Fortunes!
Kaol took a step toward her, a hand on his sword.
Don't be so rude to your customers.
The crone smiled, her teeth glinting in the afternoon light as she sniffed at him.
And what would a man who smells of the Silver Lake do to an innocent old witch like me?
A chill went down Dorian's spine, and it was Selena's turn to grab onto Kaol's arm as she tried to pull him away, but Kaol refused to move.
I don't know what sort of sham you're running, old woman, but you'd best mind your tongue before you lose it.
Baba Yellowlegs licked her razor-sharp teeth.
Come and get it, she purred.
Challenge flashed in Kaol's eyes, but Selena was still so pale that Dorian took her by the arm, leading her away.
Let's go,
he said, and the old woman shifted her eyes to him. If she could indeed tell things about them, then the last place he wanted to be was here.
Kaol, let's go.
The witch was grinning at him as she used a long metallic nail to pick out something from her teeth.
Hide from fate all you like,
Baba Yellowleg said as they turned away.
But it shall soon find you.
You're shaking.
No, I'm not, Selena hissed, batting Kaol's hand from her arm. It was bad enough that Dorian was there, but for Kaol to witness her coming face to face with Baba Yellowlegs. She knew the stories, legends that had given her brutal nightmares as a child, a first-hand account that a former friend had once told her. Given how that friend had foully betrayed and nearly killed her, Selena had hoped that the horrific stories about the Iron Teeth witches were just more lies. But seeing that woman, Selena swallowed hard. Seeing that woman, feeling the sense of otherness that radiated from her. Selena had no trouble believing that these witches were capable of consuming a human child until nothing but clean-picked bones remained. Frozen down to her core now, she followed Dorian as he strode away from the carnival. While she'd been standing in front of that wagon, all she'd wanted, for some reason, was to get inside it, like there was something waiting for her within. And that crown of stars the witch had been wearing. And then her amulet had started feeling heavy and warm, the way it had the night she'd seen that person in the hall. If she ever came back to the carnival, she would bring Nehemia with her, just to see if Yellowlegs was indeed what she claimed to be. She didn't give a damn about what was in the cages. Not anymore. Not with Yellowlegs to hold her interest. She followed Dorian and Kaol without hearing a single word they said, until they had somehow arrived at the royal stables, and Dorian was leading them inside.
I was going to give it to you on your birthday, he said to Kaol. But why wait another 2 days?
Kaol exclaimed. Dorian stopped before a stall.
Are you out of your mind?
Dorian grinned, an expression she hadn't seen in so long that it made her remember late nights spent tangled up with him, the warmth of his breath on her skin.
What? You deserve it.
A night-black Asterian stallion stood within the pen, staring at them with ancient dark eyes. Kaol was backing away, hands raised.
This is a gift for a prince, not—
Dorian clicked his tongue.
Nonsense! I'll be offended if you don't accept. I can't.
Kaol shifted pleading eyes to Selena, but she shrugged.
I had an Asterian mare once, she admitted,
and both of them blinked. Selena went up to the stall and held out her fingers, letting the stallion sniff her.
Her name was Cassida.
She smiled at the memory, stroking the stallion's velvet-soft nose.
It meant drinker of the wind in the dialect of the Red Desert.
She looked like a storm-tossed sea.
How did you get an Asterian mare? They're worth even more than the stallions, Dorian said. It was the first normal-sounding question he'd asked her in weeks. She looked over her shoulder at them and flashed a fiendish grin.
I stole her from the Lord of Xandria.
Kaol's eyes grew wide, and Dorian cocked his head. It was so comical that she started laughing.
I swear on the word it's the truth. I'll tell you the story some other time.
She backed away, nudging Kaol toward the pen. The horse huffed at his fingers, and beast and man looked at each other. Dorian was still watching her with narrowed brows, but when she caught him staring, he turned to Kaol.
Is it too early to ask what you'll be doing for your birthday?
Selena crossed her arms.
We have plans,
she said before Kaol could reply.
She didn't mean to sound so sharp, but, well, she'd been planning the night for a few weeks now.
Kaol looked at her over a shoulder.
We do?
Selena gave him a venomously sweet smile.
Oh, yes. It might not be an Asterian stallion, but...
Dorian's eyes flashed. Well, I hope you have fun, he interrupted. Kaol quickly looked back at the horse as Selena and Dorian faced each other. Whatever familiar expressions he'd once worn were now gone, and part of her, the part that had spent so many nights looking forward to seeing that handsome face, truly mourned it. Looking at him became difficult. She left them in the stables with a brief goodnight, congratulating Kaol on his new gift. She didn't dare turn in the direction of the carnival, where the sound of the crowd suggested that Holland had made his appearance and unveiled the cages. Instead, she sprinted up the stairs to the warmth of her rooms, trying to shut out the image of the witch's iron teeth and the way she'd called after them with those words about fate, so similar to what Mort had said on the night of the eclipse. Perhaps it was intuition, or perhaps it was because she was a miserable person who couldn't even trust the advice of a friend, but she wanted to go back to the tomb, alone. Maybe Nehemia was wrong about the amulet being irrelevant, and she was tired of waiting for her friend to find the time to research the eye riddle. She'd go back just once and never tell Nehemia, because the hole in the wall was shaped like an eye, its iris removed to form a space that would perfectly fit the amulet she wore around her neck.
Chapter 20
Mort, Selena said, and the skull knocker opened an eye.
It's terribly rude to wake someone when they're sleeping, he said drowsily.
Would you have preferred it if I had knocked on your face?
He glared at her.
I need to know something.
She held out the amulet.
This necklace, does it truly have power?
Of course it does.
But it's thousands of years old.
So?
Mort yawned.
It's magic. Magical things rarely age as normal objects do.
But what does it do?
It protects you, as Elena said. It guards you from harm, though you certainly seem to do your best to get into trouble.
Selena opened the door.
I think I know what it does.
Perhaps it was mere coincidence, but the riddle had been worded so specifically. Perhaps Davis had been looking for the same thing Elena wanted her to find. The source of the king's power. This could be the first step toward uncovering that.
You're probably wrong, Mort said as she walked by. I'm just warning you.
She didn't listen. She went right up to the hollow eye in the wall and stood on tiptoe to look through. The wall on the other side was still blank. Unfastening her necklace, Selena carefully lifted the amulet to the eye, and it fit. Sort of. Her breath caught in her throat, and Selena leaned up against the hole, peering through the delicate gold bands. Nothing. No change on the wall or on the giant word mark. She turned the necklace upside down, but it was the same. She tried it on either side, backward, angled, but nothing. Just the same blank stone wall, illuminated by a shaft of moonlight from some vent above. She pushed against the stone, feeling for any door, any movable panel.
But it's the eye of Elena. It is only with the eye that one can see rightly. What other eye is there?
You could rip out your own and see if it fits. Mort sang from the doorway.
Why won't it work? Do I need to say a spell?
She glanced at the sarcophagus of the queen. Perhaps the spell would be triggered by ancient words. Words hiding right under her nose. Wasn't that always how these things happened? She refitted the amulet into the stone.
Ah,
she called into the night air, reciting the words engraved at Elena's feet. Time's rift. Nothing happened. Mort cackled. She snatched the amulet out of the wall.
Oh, I hate this. I hate this stupid tomb, and I hate these stupid riddles and mysteries.
Fine. Fine, Nehemia was right that the amulet was a dead end, and she was a wretched, horrible friend for being so distrustful and impatient. I told you it wouldn't work.
Then what will work? That riddle does reference something in this tomb, behind that wall, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. But you still haven't asked the proper question.
I've asked you dozens of questions, and you won't give me any answers.
Come back another... he started. But Selena had already stalked up the stairs. Selena stood on the barren edge of a ravine, a chill northern wind ruffling her hair. She'd had this dream before. Always this setting. Always this night of the year. Behind her sloped a rocky, wasted plain, and before her stretched a chasm so long it disappeared into the starlit horizon. Across the ravine was a lush, dark wood, rustling with life. And on the grassy lip of the other side stood the white stag, watching her with ancient eyes. His massive antlers glowed in the moonlight, wreathing him in ivory glory, just as she remembered. It had been on a chill night like this that she'd spotted him through the bars of her prison wagon on the way to Endovier, a glimmer of a world before it was burned to ash. They watched each other in silence. She took a half step closer to the edge, but paused as loose pebbles trickled free, tumbling into the ravine. There was no end to the darkness in that ravine. No end and no beginning, either. It seemed to breathe, pulsing with whispers of faded memories, forgotten faces. Sometimes it felt as though the darkness stared back at her, and the face it wore was her own. Beneath the dark, she could have sworn she heard the rushing of a half-frozen river, swollen with melting snow off the staghorns. A flash of white, the thud of hooves on soft earth, and Selena looked up from the ravine. The stag had come closer, his head now angled, as if inviting her to join him. But the ravine only seemed to grow wider, like the maw of a giant beast opening to devour the world. So Selena did not cross, and the stag turned away, his steps near silent as he disappeared between the tangled trees of the ageless wood. Selena awoke to darkness. The fire was nothing but cinders, and the moon had set. She studied the ceiling, the faint shadows cast by the city lights in the distance. It was always the same dream, always this one night. As if she could ever forget the day when everything she had loved had been wrenched from her, and she'd awoken covered in blood that was not her own. She got out of bed, Fleetfoot leaping down beside her. She walked a few steps, then paused in the center of the room, staring into the dark, into the endless ravine still beckoning to her. Fleetfoot nuzzled her bare legs, and Selena reached down to stroke the hound's head. They remained there for a moment, gazing into that blackness without end. Selena left the castle long before dawn broke. When Selena didn't meet Kael at the barracks door that dawn, he gave her 10 minutes before stalking up to her rooms. Just because she didn't feel like going out in the cold wasn't an excuse to be lax with her training. Not to mention, he was particularly interested in hearing the story about how she'd stolen an Asterian mare from the Lord of Zandria. He smiled at the thought, shaking his head. Only Selena would have the nerve to do something like that. His smile faded when he reached her chambers and found Nehemia sitting at the small table in the foyer, a cup of steaming tea before her. There were some books piled in front of the princess, and she looked up from one of them as he entered. Kael bowed. The princess just said, "She is not here."
Selena's bedroom door was open wide enough to reveal that the bed was empty and already made.
Where is she?
Nehemia's eyes softened, and she picked up a note that was lying among the books. She has taken today off, she said, reading from the note before setting it down. If I were to guess, I'd say that she is as far away from the city as she can get in half a day's ride.
Why?
Nehemia smiled sadly. Because today is the 10th anniversary of her parents' death. Chapter 21 Kaol's breath caught. He remembered her screaming at the duel with Kane, when Kane had taunted her about the brutal murder of her parents, when she'd awoken covered in their blood. She'd never told him anything else, and he hadn't dared ask. He knew she'd been young, but he hadn't realized she'd been only 8. 8. 10 years ago, Terrasen had been in upheaval, and anyone who had defied Otterlin's invading forces had been slaughtered. Entire families had been dragged out of their homes and murdered. His stomach clenched. What horrors had she witnessed that day? Kaol ran a hand over his face.
She told you about her parents and her note.
Maybe it held a shred more information, anything for him to better understand what sort of woman he'd be facing when she returned, what sort of memories he'd have to contend with. No, Nehemia said. She didn't tell me, but I know. She watched him with a calculated stillness, a switch to the defensive that he recognized. What sort of secrets was she protecting for her friend? And what sort of secrets did Nehemia herself keep that had caused the king to have her watched? The fact that he didn't know anything about it, about how much the king knew, enraged him to no end. And then there was the other question. Who had threatened the princess's life? He'd ordered more guards to look after her, but so far there had been no sign of anyone wanting to harm her.
How do you know about her parents? He asked.
Some things you hear with your ears, others you hear with your heart. He looked away from the intensity in her eyes.
When is she coming back?
Nehemia returned to the book in front of her. It looked like it was filled with strange symbols, vaguely familiar markings that tickled at his memory. She said she won't be back until after nightfall. If I were to guess, I'd say she didn't want to spend one moment of daylight in this city, especially in this castle. In the home of the man whose soldiers had probably butchered her family. Kaol took the morning training run alone. He ran through the mist-shrouded game park until his very bones were exhausted. In the misty foothills above Rifthold, Selena strode between the trees of the small forest, barely more than a sliver of darkness winding through the woods. She had been walking since before dawn, letting Fleetfoot follow as she would. Today, even the forest seemed silent. Good. Today was not a day for the sounds of life. Today was for the hollow wind rustling branches, for the rushing of a half-frozen river, for the crunch of snow under her boots. On this day last year, she'd known what she had to do, had seen every step with such brutal clarity that it had been easy when the time came. She'd once told Dorian and Kaol that she'd snapped that day in the salt mines of Endovir. But it was a lie. Snapped implied too human a feeling, nothing like the cold, hopeless rage that had taken hold and shut everything down when she'd awoken from the dream of the stag and the ravine. She found a large boulder nestled between the bumps and hollows, and sank down on its smooth, ice-cold top, Fleetfoot soon sitting beside her. Wrapping her arms around the dog, Selena looked out into the still forest and remembered the day she'd unleashed herself upon Endovir. Selena panted through her bared teeth as she yanked the pickaxe out of the overseer's stomach. The man gurgled blood, clutching at his gut as he looked to the slaves in supplication. But one glance from Selena, one flash of eyes that showed she had gone beyond the edge, kept the slaves at bay. She merely smiled down at the overseer as she swung the axe into his face. His blood sprayed her legs.
The slaves still stayed far away when she brought down the axe upon the shackles that bound her ankles to the rest of them. She didn't offer to free them, and they didn't ask. They knew how useless it would be. The woman at the end of the chain gang was unconscious. Her back poured blood, split open by the iron-tipped whip of the dead overseer. She would die by tomorrow if her wounds were not treated. Even if they were, she'd probably die from infection. And Ovier amused itself like that. Selena turned from the woman. She had work to do, and four overseers had to pay a debt before she was done. She stalked from the mine shaft, pickaxe dangling from her hand. The two guards at the end of the tunnel were dead before they realized what was happening. Blood soaked her clothes and her bare arms, and Selena wiped it from her face as she stormed down to the chamber where she knew the four overseers worked. She had marked their faces the day they dragged that young Eelway woman behind the building. Marked every detail about them as they used her, then slit her throat from ear to ear. Selena could have taken the swords from the fallen guards, but for these four men, it had to be the axe. She wanted them to know what Endovier felt like. She reached the entrance to their section of the mines. The first two overseers died when she heaved the axe into their necks, slashing back and forth between them. Their slaves screamed, backing against the walls as she raged past them. When she reached the other two overseers, she let them see her, let them try to draw their blades. She knew it wasn't the weapon in her hands that made them stupid with panic, but rather her eyes. Eyes that told them they had been tricked these past few months, that cutting her hair and whipping her hadn't been enough. That she had been baiting them into forgetting that Otterlin's assassin was in their midst. But she had not forgotten a second of pain, nor what she had seen them do to the others, to that young woman from Eelway who had begged to gods who did not save her. The men died too quickly, but Selena had one more task to complete before she would meet her end. She prowled back up the main tunnel that led out of the mines. Guards foolishly came rushing out of tunnel mouths to meet her. She surged upward, hacking and swinging. Two more guards went down, and she took up their swords, leaving the axe behind. The slaves didn't cheer as their oppressors fell. They just watched in silence, understanding. This was not a fight for escape. The light of the surface made her blink, but she was ready. Her eyes having to adjust to the sun would be her greatest weakness. That was why she had waited until the softer light of afternoon. Twilight would have been better, but that time of day was too heavily guarded, and there were too many slaves about then that could be caught in the crossfire. This last hour of full daylight, when the warm sun lulled many to sleep, was when the sentries went lax on watch before the evening inspection. The three sentries at the entrance to the mines didn't know what was happening below. Everyone was always screaming in Endovier. Everyone sounded the same when they died. And the three sentries screamed just like the others. And then she was running, sprinting for the death that beckoned to her, making for the towering stone wall at the other end of the compound. Arrows whizzed past, and she zigzagged. They wouldn't kill her by order of the king. An arrow through the shoulder or leg, maybe. But she'd make them reconsider their orders once the carnage was too massive to ignore. Other sentries came rushing from everywhere, and her blades were a song of steel fury as she cut through them. Silence settled over Endovier. She took a gash in her leg, deep, but not deep enough to cut the tendon. They still wanted her able to work, but she wouldn't work. Not again. Not for them. When the body count was high enough, they'd have no choice but to put that arrow through her throat. But then she neared the gate, and the arrow stopped. She started laughing when she found herself surrounded by 40 guards, and laughed even more when they called for irons. She was laughing when she lashed out one last time, one final attempt to touch the wall. Four more went down in her wake. She was still laughing when the world went black and her fingers hit the rocky ground, barely an inch away from the wall. Kaol stood from his seat at her foyer table, as the door quietly opened. The outside hall was dark. The lights burned out.
most of the castle asleep and tucked into their beds. He'd heard the clock chime midnight some time ago, but he knew it wasn't exhaustion weighing down Selena's shoulders when she slipped into her rooms. Her eyes were purple beneath, her face wan, lips colorless. Fleetfoot rushed to him, tail wagging, and licked him a few times on the hand before she trotted into the bedroom, leaving them alone. Selena glanced once at him, her turquoise and gold eyes weary and haunted, and began unfastening her cloak as she walked past him into the bedroom. Wordlessly, he followed her, if only because she hadn't had a hint of warning or reproach in her expression, rather a bleakness that suggested she wouldn't have cared if she'd found the King of Otterlin himself in her rooms. She removed her coat, and then her boots, leaving them wherever she happened to discard them. He looked away as she unbuttoned her tunic and walked into the dressing room. A moment later, she walked back out, wearing a nightgown that was far more modest than her usual lacy attire. Fleetfoot had already hopped into bed, sprawling against the pillows. Kaol swallowed hard. He should have given her privacy instead of waiting here. If she'd wanted him to be here, she would have written him a note. Selena stopped before the dim fireplace and used the poker to stir the coals before tossing another two logs on. She stared down at the flames. Her back was still to him when she spoke. "If you're trying to figure out what to say to me, don't bother. There's nothing that can be said or done." "Then let me keep you company." If she realized how much he knew, she didn't care to ask how.
"I don't want company."
"Want and need are different things. Nehemia probably should have been here, another child of a conquered kingdom. But he didn't want Nehemia to be the one she turned to. And despite his loyalty to the king, he couldn't turn away from her. Not today." "So you're just going to stay here all night?" She flicked her eyes to the couch between them. "I've slept in worse places."
"I think my experience with worse places is a lot more horrible than yours."
Again, that twisting in his gut. But then she looked through the open bedroom door to the foyer table, and her brows rose.
"Is that chocolate cake?"
"I thought you might need some."
"Need, not want?"
A ghost of a smile was on her lips, and he almost sagged in relief as he said, "For you, I'd say that chocolate cake is most definitely a need." She crossed from the fireplace to where he stood, stopping a hand's breadth away and staring up at him. Some of the color had returned to her face. He should step back, put more distance between them. But instead, he found himself reaching for her, a hand slipping around her waist and the other twining itself through her hair as he held her tightly to him. His heart thundered through him so hard he knew she could feel it. After a second, her arms came up around him, her fingers digging into his back in a way that made him realize how close they stood. He shoved that feeling down, even as the silken texture of her hair against his fingers made him want to bury his face in it, and the smell of her, laced with mist and night, had him grazing his nose against her neck. There were other kinds of comfort that he could give her than mere words, and if she needed that kind of distraction, he shoved down that thought too, swallowing it until he nearly choked on it. Her fingers were moving down his back, still digging into his muscles with a fierce kind of possession. If she kept touching him like that, his control was going to slip completely. And then she pulled back, just far enough to look up at him again. Still so close, their breath mingled. He found himself gauging the distance between their lips, his eyes flicking between her mouth and her eyes, the hand he had entwined in her hair stilling. Desire roared through him, burning down every defense he'd put up, erasing every line he'd convinced himself he had to maintain. And then she said, so quietly it was hardly more than a murmur, "I can't tell if I should be ashamed of wanting to hold you on this day, or grateful that, despite what happened before now, it somehow brought me to you." He was so startled by the words that he let go and stepped back. He had his obstacles to overcome, but so did she, perhaps more obstacles than he'd even realized. He had no response to what she'd said, but she didn't give him time to think of the right words before she walked to the chocolate cake in the foyer, plunked down in the chair, and dug in.
Chapter 22. The silence of the library wrapped around Dorian like a heavy blanket, interrupted only by the turning of pages as he read through his family's extensive genealogical charts, records, and histories. He couldn't be the only one. If he truly did have magic, then what about Holland? It had taken until now to manifest, so perhaps it wouldn't reveal itself in Holland for another 9 years. Hopefully by then, he'd figure out how to suppress it and teach Holland to do the same. He might not be fond of his brother, but he didn't wish the boy dead. Especially not the kind of death their father would give them if he learned what dwelled in their blood. Beheading, dismemberment, then burning. Complete annihilation. No wonder the Fae had fled the continent. They had been powerful and wise, but Otterlin had military might and a frantic public looking for any solution to the famine and poverty that had plagued the kingdom for decades. It hadn't just been the armies that had made the Fae run. No, it was also the people who had lived in an uneasy truce with them, as well as the mortals gifted with magic for generations. How would those people react if they knew that their heir to the throne was plagued by the same powers? Dorian ran a finger down his mother's family tree. It was dotted with Haveliards along the way, a close mingling of their two families for the past few centuries that had given rise to numerous kings. But he'd been here for 3 hours now, and none of the rotting old books held any mention of magic wielders. In fact, there had been a drought in the line for centuries. Several gifted people had married into the bloodline, but their children hadn't been born with the power, no matter what manner of gifts their parents possessed. Was it coincidence or divine will? Dorian closed the book and stalked back into the stacks. He reached the section along the back wall that held all the genealogical records and pulled out the oldest book he could find, one that held records dating back to the founding of Otterlin itself. There, on the top of the family tree, was Gavin Haveliard, the mortal prince who had taken his warband into the depths of the Rune Mountains to challenge the Dark Lord Erewhon. The war had been long and brutal, and in the end, only a third of the men who had ridden in with Gavin came out of those mountains. But Gavin also emerged from that war with his bride, the Princess Elena, the half-fae daughter of Brannan, Terrasen's first king. It was Brannan himself who gave Gavin the territory of Otterlin as a wedding gift, and a reward for the prince and princess's sacrifices during the war. And since then, no fae blood had bred into their line. Dorian followed the tree down and down, just long-forgotten families whose lands were now called by different names. Dorian sighed, set down the book, and browsed through the stack. If Elena had gifted the line with her power, then perhaps answers could be found elsewhere. He was surprised to see the book sitting there, given how his father had destroyed that noble house 10 years ago. But there it was, a history of the Galathinius line, starting with the Fae King Brannan himself. Dorian flipped through the pages, his brows raised high. He'd known the line was blessed with magic, but this... It was a powerhouse, a bloodline so mighty that other kingdoms had lived in terror of the day the lords of Terrasen would come to claim their lands. But they never had. While they'd been gifted, they'd never once pushed their borders, even when wars came to their doorstep. When foreign kings had threatened them, the retribution had been swift and brutal. But always, no matter what, they kept to their borders, kept the peace. As my father should have done. Despite all their power, though, the Galathinius family had fallen, and their noble lords with them. In the book he held, no one had bothered to mark the houses his father had exterminated, or the survivors sent into exile. Without the heart or the knowledge to do it himself, Dorian closed the book, grimacing as all those names burned in his vision. What sort of throne would he inherit someday? If the heir of Terrasen, Elaion Galathinius, had lived, would she have become a friend, an ally? His bride, perhaps? He'd met her once, in the days before her kingdom became a charnel house. The memory was hazy, but she'd been a precocious wild girl, and had set her nasty, brutish older cousin on him in order to teach Dorian a lesson for spilling tea on her dress. Dorian rubbed his neck.
Of course, as fate would have it, her cousin wound up becoming Adian Ashriver, his father's prodigy general and the fiercest warrior in the North. He'd met Adian a few times over the years, and at each encounter with the haughty young general, he'd gotten the distinct impression that Adian wanted to kill him, and with good reason. Shuddering, Dorian replaced the book and stared at the bookcase, as if it would yield any answers, but he already knew there was nothing here that could help him.
"When the time comes, I will help you."
Did Nehemia know what dwelt inside him? She had acted so strangely that day at the duel, drawing symbols in the air and then fainting. And then there had been the moment when that mark had burned on Selena's brow. A clock chimed somewhere in the library, and he glanced down the aisle. He should go. It was Kaol's birthday, and he should at least say hello to his friend before Selena whisked him off. Of course, he hadn't been invited, and Kaol hadn't tried to suggest that Dorian was welcome, either. What did she plan to do, exactly? The temperature in the library dropped, a frozen draft blowing in from a distant corridor. Not that he cared. He'd meant it when he swore to Nehemia that he was done with Selena. And maybe he should have told Kaol that he could have her. Not that she'd ever belonged to him, or that she'd even tried to suggest that he belonged to her. He could let go. He had let go. He'd let go. Let go. Let... Books flew from their shelves, dozens upon dozens bursting into flight, and this time they slammed into him as he staggered back toward the end of the row. He shielded his face, and when the sound of leather and paper stopped, Dorian braced a hand on the stone wall behind him and gaped. Half of the books in the row had been tossed off their shelves and scattered about, as if thrown by some invisible force. He rushed to them, shoving volumes back onto their shelves in no order whatsoever, working as fast as he could before one of the crotchety royal librarians came hobbling over to see what the noise was about. It took him a few minutes to put them all back, his heart pounding so hard he thought he'd be sick again. His hands trembled, and not just with fear. No, there was some force still running through him, begging him to unleash it again, to open himself up. Dorian crammed the last book back onto the shelf and took off at a run. He could tell no one, trust no one. When he reached the main hall of the library, he slowed to a walk, feigning a lazy carelessness. He even managed to smile at the old, withered librarian who bowed to him as he passed. Dorian gave him a friendly wave before striding out the towering oak doors. He could trust no one. That witch at the carnival, she hadn't recognized him as the prince. Still, her gift had rung true, at least when talking to Kaol. It was a risk, but perhaps Baba Yellowlegs had the answers he needed. Selena wasn't nervous. She had nothing, absolutely nothing, to be worried about. It was just a dinner. A dinner she'd spent weeks arranging whenever she had a spare moment while spying on those men in Rifthold. A dinner at which she'd be alone, with Kaol. And after last night, Selena took a surprisingly shaky breath and checked herself in the mirror one last time. The dress was pale blue, almost white, and encrusted with crystal beading that made the fabric look like the shimmering surface of the sea. Perhaps it was a bit much, but she'd told Kaol to dress well, so hopefully he'd be wearing something nice enough to make her feel less self-conscious. Selena huffed. Gods above, she was feeling self-conscious, wasn't she? It was ridiculous, really. It was just a dinner. Fleetfoot was with Nehemia for the night, and if she didn't leave now, she'd be late. Refusing to let herself sweat another second longer, Selena grabbed her ermine cloak from where Philippa had left it on the ottoman in the center of her dressing room. When she reached the entrance hall, Kaol was already waiting for her by the doors. Even from across the massive space, she could tell his eyes were on her as she descended the stairs. Not surprisingly, he wore black, but at least it wasn't his uniform. No, his tunic and pants looked to be of fine make, and it seemed like he'd even run a comb through his short hair. He watched her every step across the hall, his face unreadable. At last, she stopped in front of him, the cold air from the open doors biting into her face. She hadn't gone for their run this morning,
and he hadn't come to drag her outside.
"Happy birthday," she said before he could object to her clothes.
His eyes rose to her face, and he gave her a half-smile, that unreadable, closed-off expression vanishing.
"Do I even want to know where you're taking me?"
She grinned at him, her nerves melting away.
"Somewhere utterly inappropriate for the captain of the guard to be seen." She inclined her head toward the carriage that waited outside the castle doors.
Good. She'd threatened to flay the driver and footman alive if they were late.
"Shall we?" As they rode through the city, sitting on opposite sides of the carriage, they talked about anything but last night. The carnival, Fleetfoot, Holland's daily tantrums. They even debated whether spring would start showing itself at last. When they reached the building, an old apothecary, Kaol raised his brows.
"Just wait," she said, and led him into the warmly lit shop.
The owner smiled at her, beckoning them up the narrow stone staircase. Kaol said nothing as they went up and up the stairs, past the second level and the third, until they reached a door at the uppermost landing. The landing was small enough that he brushed against the skirts of her gown, and when she turned to him, one hand on the doorknob, she gave him a small smile.
"It might not be an Asterian stallion, but..."
She opened the door, stepping aside so he could enter. Wordlessly, he walked in. She'd spent hours arranging everything, and in the daylight it had looked lovely, but at night, it was exactly as she imagined it would be. The roof of the apothecary was an enclosed glass greenhouse, filled with flowers and potted plants and fruit trees that had been hung with little glittering lights. The whole place had been transformed into a garden out of an ancient legend. The air was warm and sweet, and by the windows overlooking the expanse of the Avery River stood a small table set for two. Kaol surveyed the room, turning in place.
"It's the Fae Woman's Garden, from Rena Goldsmith's song," he said softly. His golden eyes were bright.
She swallowed hard. "I know it's not much.
No one has ever done anything like this for me."
He shook his head in awe, looking back at the greenhouse.
"No one."
"It's just a dinner," she said, rubbing her neck and walking to the table, if only because the urge to go to him was so strong that she needed a table between them. He followed her, and an instant later, two servants appeared to pull out their chairs for them. She smiled a little as Kaol's hand shot to his sword, but upon seeing that they were not being ambushed, he gave her a sheepish glance and sat down. The servants poured two glasses of sparkling wine, then bustled off for the food that they'd spent all day preparing in the apothecary's kitchen. She'd managed to hire the cook from the Willows for the night, for a fee that had made her consider punching the woman's throat. It was worth it, though. She lifted her flute of wine.
"Many happy returns," she said. She'd had a little speech prepared, but now that they were here, now that his eyes were so bright, and he was looking at her the way he had last night, all the words went right out of her head.
Kaol lifted his glass and drank.
"Before I forget to say it, thank you. This is..."
He examined the glittering greenhouse again, then looked out to the river beyond the glass walls.
"This is..."
He shook his head once more, setting down his glass, and she caught a glimmer of silver in his eyes that made her heart clench. He blinked it away and looked back at her with a small smile.
"No one has thrown me a birthday party since I was a child."
She scoffed, fighting past the tightness in her chest.
"I'd hardly call this a party."
"Stop trying to downplay it. It's the greatest gift I've been given in a long while."
She crossed her arms, leaning back in her chair as the servants arrived, bringing their first course, roast boar stew. "Dorian got you an Asterian stallion."
Kaol was staring down at his soup, brows high. "But Dorian doesn't know what my favorite stew is, does he?"
He glanced up at her, and she bit her lip.
"How long have you been paying attention?"
She became very interested in her stew. "Don't flatter yourself. I just bullied the castle's head cook to tell me what dishes you favored."
He snorted. "You might be Otterland's assassin, but even you couldn't bully Megara. If you'd tried, I'd think you'd be sitting there with two black eyes and a broken nose.
She smiled, taking a bite of stew. Well, you might think you're mysterious and brooding and stealthy, Captain, but once you know where to look, you're a fairly easy book to read. Every time we have roast boar stew, I can barely get a spoonful before you've eaten the whole tureen. He tipped his head back and laughed, and the sound sent heat coursing through every part of her.
And here I was, thinking I'd managed to hide my weaknesses so well.
She gave him a wicked grin. Just wait until you see the other courses. When they'd eaten the last crumb of chocolate hazelnut cake and drunk the last of the sparkling wine, and when the servants had cleared everything away and bid their farewells, Selena found herself standing on the small balcony at the far edge of the roof, the summer plants buried under a blanket of snow. She held her cloak close to her as she stared toward the distant spot where the Avery met the ocean. Kaol beside her, leaning against the iron railing.
There's a hint of spring in the air,
he said as a mild wind whipped past them. Thank the gods, any more snow and I'll go mad. In the glow of the lights from the greenhouse, his profile was illuminated. She'd meant the dinner to be a nice surprise, a way to tell him how much she appreciated him. But his reaction. How long had it been since he felt cherished? Apart from that girl who had treated him so foully, there was also the matter of the family that had shunned him just because he wanted to be a guard, and they were too proud to have a son serve the crown in that manner. Did his parents have any idea that in the entire castle, in the entire kingdom, there was no one more noble and loyal than him? That the boy they'd thrown out of their lives had become the sort of man that kings and queens could only dream of having serve in their courts. The sort of man that she hadn't believed existed. Not after Sam. Not after everything that had happened. The king had threatened to kill Kaol if she didn't obey his orders. And, considering how much danger she was putting him in right now, and how much she wanted to gain, not just for herself, but for them.
I have to tell you something, she said softly.
Her blood roared through her ears, especially as he turned to her with a smile.
And before I tell you, you have to promise not to go berserk.
The smile faded. Why do I have a bad feeling about this?
Just promise.
She clenched the railing, the cold metal biting into her bare hands. He studied her carefully, then said,
I'll try.
Fair enough. Like a damned coward, she turned away from him, focusing on the distant ocean instead.
I haven't killed any of the people the king commanded me to assassinate.
Silence. She didn't dare look at him. I've been faking their deaths and smuggling them out of their homes. Their personal effects are given to me after I approach them with my offer, and the body parts come from sick houses. The only person that I've actually killed so far is Davis, and he wasn't even an official target. At the end of the month, once Archer has gotten his affairs in order, I'll fake his death, and Archer will get on the next ship out of Rifthold and sail away. Her chest was so tight it hurt, and she slid her eyes to him. Kaol's face was bone white. He backed away, shaking his head. You've gone mad.
Chapter 23. He must have heard her incorrectly, because there was no possible way that she could be that brash, that foolish and insane and idealistic and brave.
Have you lost your senses completely?
His words rose into a shout, a riot of rage and fear that rushed through him so fast he could hardly think.
He'll kill you. He will kill you if he finds out.
She took a step toward him, that spectacular dress glinting like a thousand stars.
He won't find out.
It's only a matter of time, he gritted out. He has spies who are watching everything.
And you'd rather I kill innocent men?
Those men are traitors to the crown.
Traitors?
She barked a laugh.
Traitors for refusing to grovel before a conqueror? For sheltering escaped slaves trying to get home? For daring to believe in a world that's better than this God's forsaken place?
She shook her head, some of her hair escaping.
I will not be his butcher.
And he hadn't wanted her to.
From the second she'd been crowned champion, he'd been sick at the thought of her doing what the king had commanded she do. But this...
You swore an oath to him.
And how many oaths did he swear to foreign rulers before he marched in with his armies and destroyed everything? How many oaths did he swear when he ascended the throne, only to spit on those promises?
He will kill you, Selena.
He grabbed her by the shoulders and shook her. He'll kill you and make me do it as punishment for being your friend. That was the terror that he grappled with, the fear that plagued him, the thing that had kept him on this side of the line for so long.
Archer has been giving me real information.
I don't give a damn about Archer. What information could that conceited ass have that could possibly help you?
The secret movement from Terrasen actually exists, she said with maddening calm. I could use the information I've gathered about it to bargain with the king to let me go, or just give me a shorter contract. Short enough that if he ever finds out the truth, I'll be long gone.
He growled.
He could have you whipped just for being that impertinent.
But then the last part of her words registered, hitting him like a punch to the face.
I'll be long gone.
Gone? Where will you go?
Anywhere, she said, as far away as I can get. He could hardly breathe, but he managed to say,
And what would you do?
She shrugged, and both of them realized that he'd been gripping her shoulders. He eased his grip, but his fingers ached to grab her again, as though it would somehow keep her from leaving.
Live my life, I suppose. Live it the way I want to, for once. Learn how to be a normal girl.
How far away?
Her blue and gold eyes flickered. I'd travel until I found a place where they'd never heard of Otterlin, if such a place exists. And she would never come back. And because she was young, and so damn clever and amusing and wonderful, wherever she made her home, there would be some man who would fall in love with her and who would make her his wife. And that was the worst truth of all. It had snuck up on him, this pain and terror and rage at the thought of anyone else with her. Every look, every word from her. He didn't even know when it had started.
We'll find that place, then,
he said quietly.
What?
Her brows narrowed.
I'll go with you.
And though he hadn't asked, they both knew those words held a question. He tried not to think of what she'd said last night, of the shame she'd felt holding him when he was a son of Otterlin and she was a daughter of Terrasen.
What about being captain of the guard?
Perhaps my duties aren't what I expected them to be.
The king kept things from him. There were so many secrets, and perhaps he was little more than a puppet, part of the illusion that he was starting to see through.
You love your country, she said. I can't let you give all that up.
He caught the glimmer of pain and hope in her eyes, and before he knew what he was doing, he'd closed the distance between them, one hand on her waist and the other on her shoulder.
I would be the greatest fool in the world to let you go alone.
And then there were tears rolling down her face, and her mouth became a thin, wobbling line. He pulled back, but didn't let her go.
Why are you crying?
Because, she whispered, her voice shaking, you remind me of how the world ought to be. What the world can be.
There had never been any line between them, only his stupid fear and pride. Because from the moment he pulled her out of that mine in Endovir, and she had set those eyes upon him, still fierce despite a year in hell, he'd been walking toward this, walking to her. So Kaol brushed away her tears, lifted her chin, and kissed her. The kiss obliterated her. It was like coming home, or being born, or suddenly finding an entire half of herself that had been missing. His lips were hot and soft against hers, still tentative. And after a moment, he pulled back far enough to look into her eyes. She trembled with the need to touch him everywhere at once, to feel him touching her everywhere at once. He would give up everything to go with her. She twined her arms around his neck, her mouth meeting his in a second kiss that knocked the world out from under her. She didn't know how long they stood on that roof, tangled up in each other, mouths and hands roving until she moaned and dragged him through the greenhouse, down the stairs, and into the carriage waiting outside. And then there was the ride home, where he did things to her neck and ear that made her forget her own name. They managed to straighten themselves out as they reached the castle gates, and kept a respectable distance as they walked back to her room. Though every inch of her felt so alive and burning that it was a miracle she made it back to her door without pulling him into a closet. But then they were inside her rooms, and then at her bedroom door, and he paused as she took his hand to lead him in. "Are you sure?" She lifted a hand to his face, exploring every curve and freckle that had become so impossibly precious to her. She had waited once before, waited with Sam, and then it had been too late. But now there was no doubt, no shred of fear or uncertainty, as if every moment between her and Kaol had been a step in a dance that had led to this threshold. "I've never been so sure of anything in my life," she told him. His eyes blazed with hunger that matched her own, and she kissed him again, tugging him into her bedroom. He let her pull him, not breaking the kiss as he kicked the door shut behind them. And then there was only them, and skin against skin. And when they reached that moment when there was nothing more between them at all, Selena kissed Kaol deeply and gave him everything she had. Selena awoke as dawn poured into her room. Kaol still held her to him, just as he had all night, as if she would somehow slip away during sleep. She smiled to herself, pressing her nose against his neck and breathing him in. He shifted, just enough for her to know that he'd awoken. His hands began moving, twining themselves in her hair. "There's no way in hell I'm getting out of this bed and going for a run," he murmured onto her head. She chuckled quietly. His hands grazed lower, down her back, not even stumbling over the scar tissue. He'd kissed every scar on her back, on her entire body last night. She smiled against his neck. "How are you feeling?" Like she was everywhere and nowhere all at once. Like she'd somehow been half-blind all her life and could now see everything clearly. Like she could stay here forever and be content. "Tired," she admitted. He tensed, but happy. She almost whined when he let go of her long enough to prop himself up on an elbow and stare down at her face. "You're all right, though?" She rolled her eyes. "I'm pretty certain tired but happy is a normal reaction after one's first time." And she was pretty certain she'd have to talk to Philippa about a contraceptive tonic as soon as she dragged herself out of bed. Because gods above, a baby. She snorted. "What?" She just shook her head, smiling.
"Nothing." She ran her fingers through his hair.
A thought hit her, and her smile faded. "How much trouble will you get in for this?" She watched his muscled chest expand as he took a deep breath, dipping his head to rest his brow on her shoulder.
"I don't know. Maybe the king won't care. Maybe he'll dismiss me. Maybe worse. It's hard to tell. He's unpredictable like that."
She chewed her lip and ran her hands down his powerful back. She'd longed to touch him like this for so long, longer than she'd realized.
"Then we'll keep it secret. We spent enough time together that no one should notice the change."
He lifted himself again, peering into her eyes.
"I don't want you to think I'm agreeing to keep it secret because I'm ashamed in any way."
"Who said anything about shame?" She gestured down to her naked body, even though it was covered by the blanket. "Honestly, I'm surprised you're not strutting about boasting to everyone. I certainly would be if I'd tumbled me."
"Does your love for yourself know no bounds?"
"Absolutely none."
He leaned down to nip at her ear, and her toes curled.
"We can't tell Dorian," she said quietly.
"He'll figure it out, I bet, but
I don't think we should tell him outright."
He paused his nibbling.
"I know."
But then he pulled back, and she winced inwardly as he studied her again.
"Do you still—"
"No. Not for a long while."
The relief in his eyes made her kiss him. But he'd be another complication if he knew. And there was no telling how he'd react, given how tense things had been between them. He was important enough in Kaol's life that she didn't want to ruin that relationship.
"So," he said, flicking her nose, "how long have you wanted?"
"I don't see how that's any of your business, Captain Westfall. And I won't tell you until you tell me."
He flicked her nose again, and she batted away his fingers.
He caught her hand in his, holding it up so he could look at her amethyst ring.
The ring she never took off, not even to bathe. The Yulmus ball. Maybe earlier. Maybe even Samhuin when I brought you this ring. But Yulmus was the first time I realized I didn't like the idea of you with someone else.
He kissed the tips of her fingers.
Your turn.
I'm not telling you, she said, because she had no idea. She was still figuring out when it had happened exactly. It somehow felt as if it had always been Kaol, even from the very beginning, even before they'd ever met. He began to protest, but she pulled him back down on top of her. And that's enough talking. I might be tired, but there are still plenty of things to do instead of going for a run. The grin Kaol gave her was hungry and wicked enough that she shrieked when he yanked her under the blankets.
Chapter 24. Dorian walked past the black tents of the carnival, wondering for the umpteenth time if this was the greatest mistake of his life. He'd lost the nerve to come yesterday, but after yet another sleepless night, he decided to see the old witch and deal with the consequences later. If he wound up on the executioner's block because of it, he'd surely kick himself for being so brash. But he had exhausted every other way of finding out why he was plagued by magic. This was his only option. He found Baba Yellowlegs sitting on the back steps of her giant wagon, a chipped plate heaped with roast chicken parts resting on her knees, a pile of clean-licked bones littering the ground below. She lifted her yellowed eyes to him, iron teeth glinting in the noontime sun as she bit into a chicken leg.
"Carnival's closed for lunch."
He swallowed his irritation.
Getting answers relied on two things, being on her good side and her not knowing who he was.
"I was hoping you'd have a few moments to answer some questions."
The chicken leg cracked in two. He tried not to cringe at the slurping sounds as she sucked out the marrow.
"Customers who have questions during lunch pay double."
He reached into his pocket and fished out the 4 gold coins he'd brought.
"I hope this will buy me all the questions I want, and your discretion."
She chucked the clean half of the leg onto the pile and set to work on the other, sucking and gnawing.
"I bet you wipe your ass with gold."
"I don't think that would be very comfortable."
Baba Yellowlegs hissed a laugh.
"Very well, Lordling. Let's hear your questions."
He leaned in close enough to set his gold on the top step beside her, keeping well away from her withered form. She smelled atrocious, like mildew and rotted blood. But he kept his face blank and bored as he pulled back. The gold vanished with a swipe of a gnarled hand. Dorian glanced around. Workers were scattered throughout the carnival. All of them settled down for the midday meal wherever they could find seats. None of them, he noticed, sat anywhere near the black-painted wagon. They didn't even look this way.
"You're truly a witch?"
She picked up a chicken wing. Crack. Crunch.
"The last born witch of the Witch Kingdom."
"That would make you over 500 years old."
She gave him a smile.
"It's a marvel I've stayed so young, isn't it?"
"So it's true. Witches really are blessed with the long lifespans of the Fae."
She tossed another bone at the foot of the wooden steps.
"Fae or Vog? We never learned which one."
Vog. He knew that name. The demons who stole Fae to breed with them. Which made the witches, right?
And, if he recalled correctly, the beautiful Kraken witches had taken after their Fae ancestors, while the 3 clans of Iron Teeth witches took after the race of demons that had invaded Aurelia at the dawn of time.
"Why would a lordling as pretty as you bother yourself with such wicked stories?"
She peeled the skin off the breast of the chicken and guzzled it down, smacking her withered lips together. When we're not wiping our asses with gold, we need to find some way to amuse ourselves. Why not learn a little history?
Indeed, the witch said. So, are you going to dance around it all day while I bake in this miserable sun? Or are you going to ask what you really came here to learn?
Is magic truly gone?
She didn't even look up from her plate. Your kind of magic is gone, yes. But there are other forgotten powers that work.
What sort of powers?
Powers that lordlings have no business knowing. Now ask your next question.
He gave her a playful, wounded face that had the old woman rolling her eyes. She made him want to run in the other direction, but he had to get through this, had to keep up the charade for as long as he could. Could one person somehow have magic?
Boy, I've traveled from one shore of this continent to the other, across every mountain, and into the dark, shadowy places where men still fear to tread. There is no magic left anymore. Even the surviving Fae can't access their powers. Some of them remained trapped in their animal forms. Miserable wretches. Taste like animals, too.
She laughed, a crow's caw that made the hair on the back of his neck rise.
So no, one person could not be the exception to the rule.
He kept up his careful mask of idle boredom. And if someone discovered that they suddenly had magic,
then they'd be a damn fool, and asking for a hanging.
He already knew that. That wasn't what he was asking. But if it were true, hypothetically, how would that even be possible? She paused her eating, cocking her head. Her silver hair gleamed like fresh snow, offsetting her tanned face.
We don't know how or why magic vanished. I hear rumors every now and then that the power still exists on other continents, but not here. So that's the real question. Why did magic vanish only here, and not across the whole of Aurelia? What crimes did we commit to make the gods curse us like that, to take away what they had once given us?
She tossed the ribcage of the chicken onto the ground.
Hypothetically, if someone had magic, and I wanted to learn why, I'd start by figuring out why magic left in the first place. Maybe that would explain how there could be an exception to the rule.
She licked the grease off her deadly fingers.
Strange questions from a lordling dwelling in the glass castle. Strange, strange questions.
He gave her a half-grin. Stranger still that the last-born witch of the Witch Kingdom would stoop low enough to spend her life doing carnival tricks.
The gods that cursed these lands 10 years ago damned the witches centuries before that.
It might have been the clouds that passed over the sun, but he could have sworn that he saw a darkness gleaming in her eyes, a darkness that made him wonder if she was even older than she let on. Perhaps her last-born witch title was a lie, a fabrication to conceal a history so violent that he couldn't imagine the horrors she'd committed during those long-ago witch wars. Against his will, he found himself reaching for the ancient force slumbering inside him, wondering if it would somehow shield him from Yellow Legs the way it had from the shattering window. The thought made him queasy.
Any other questions?
She said, licking her iron nails. No, thank you for your time.
Bah,
she spat, and waved him off. He walked away, and got no farther than the nearest tent when he saw the sun glinting off a golden head, and Roland walked toward him, away from the table where he'd been talking to that stunning blonde musician who'd played the lute the other night. Had he followed him here? Dorian frowned, but gave his cousin a nod in greeting as Roland fell into step beside him. Getting your fortune read? Dorian shrugged. I was bored. Roland looked over his shoulder to where Baba Yellowlegs' caravan wagon was parked. That woman makes my blood run cold. Dorian snorted. I think that's one of her talents. Roland glanced at him sidelong. Did she tell you anything interesting? Just the normal nonsense. I'll soon meet my true love, a glorious destiny awaits me, and I'll be rich beyond imagining. I don't think she knew who she was talking to. He surveyed the Lord of Mia. And what are you doing here, I saw you heading out and thought you might want company. But then I saw where you were going and decided to keep well away. Either Roland was spying on him, or he was telling the truth. Dorian honestly couldn't tell, but he'd made a point to be pleasant to his cousin during the past few days. And at every council meeting, Roland had backed whatever decision Dorian made without hesitation. The irritation on Parrington and his father's faces was an unexpected delight, too. So Dorian didn't question Roland about why he'd followed him, but when he glanced back at Baba Yellowlegs, he could have sworn the old woman was grinning at him. It had been a few days since Selena had tracked her targets. Cloaked in darkness, she stood in the shadows of the docks, not quite believing what she was seeing. All the men on her list, all the ones she'd been following, the ones who might know what the king was up to, were leaving. She'd seen one of them sneak into an unmarked carriage and had followed him here, where he'd boarded a ship set to depart at the midnight tide. And then, to her dismay, the other three had shown up too, their families in tow, before they were quickly ushered below decks. All those men, all that information she'd been gathering, just...
I'm sorry,
a familiar voice said behind her, and she whirled to find Archer approaching. How was he so stealthy? She hadn't even heard him getting close.
I had to warn them,
he said, his eyes on the ship getting ready to depart.
I couldn't live with their blood on my hands. They have children. What would become of them if you handed over their parents to the king?
She hissed, did you organize this?
No,
he said softly, the words barely audible above the shouts of the sailors untying the ropes and readying the oars.
A member of the organization did. I mentioned that their lives might be in jeopardy, and he had his men get them on the next ship out of Rifthold.
She put a hand on her dagger. Part of this bargain relies on you giving me useful information.
I know. I'm sorry.
Would you rather I just faked your death now and put you on that ship as well? Perhaps she'd find another way to convince the king to release her earlier.
No, this won't happen again.
She highly doubted that, but she leaned back against the wall of the building and crossed her arms, watching Archer observe the ship. After a moment, he turned to her.
Say something.
I don't have anything to say. I'm too busy debating whether I should just kill you and drag your carcass before the king. She wasn't bluffing. After last night with Kaol, she was starting to wonder whether simplicity would be best. Anything to keep Kaol from getting ensnared in a potential mess.
I'm sorry, Archer said again,
but she waved him off and watched the readying ship. It was impressive that they'd organized an escape so quickly. Perhaps they weren't all fools like Davis.
The person you mentioned this to, she said after a while. He's a leader of the group?
I think so, Archer said quietly. Or high up enough that when I dropped the hint about these men, he was able to organize an escape immediately.
She chewed on the inside of her cheek. Perhaps Davis had been a fluke, and maybe Archer was right. Maybe these men just wanted a ruler who would better suit their tastes. But whatever their financial and political motives might be, when innocent people had been threatened, they'd mobilized and gotten them to safety. Few people in the Empire dared to do that, and fewer still were getting away with it.
I want new names and more information by tomorrow night, she told Archer as she turned away from the docks, heading back toward the castle. Or else I'll toss your head at the king's feet, and let him decide whether he wants me to dump it in the sewer or spike it on the front gates. She didn't wait for Archer's reply before she faded into the shadows and fog. She took her time going back to the castle, thinking about what she'd seen. There was never absolute good or absolute evil, though the king was definitely the exception. And even if these men were corrupt in some ways, they were also saving lives. While it was absurd that they claimed to have contact with Aelin Galathinius, she couldn't help but wonder if there really were forces gathering in the heir's name. If somewhere, in the past decade, members of the powerful royal court of Terrasen had managed to hide. Thanks to the King of Otterlin, Terrasen no longer had a standing army, just whatever forces were camped throughout the kingdom. But those men did have some resources.
and Nehemia had said that if Terrasen ever got to its feet again, it would pose a real threat to Otterlin. So maybe she wouldn't even have to do anything. Maybe she wouldn't have to risk her life or Kaol's. Maybe, just maybe, whatever their motives, these people could find a way to stop the king and free all of Aurelia as well. A slow, reluctant smile spread across her face, and it only grew wider as she walked to the glowing glass castle and to the captain of the guard who awaited her there. It had been 4 days since Kaol's birthday, and he'd spent every night since then with Selena, and afternoons, and mornings, and every moment they could spare from their individual obligations. Unfortunately, this meeting with his chief guards wasn't optional, but as he listened to the men's reports, his thoughts kept drifting back to her. He'd barely breathed during that first time, and he'd done his best to be gentle, to make it as painless for her as possible. She'd still winced, and her eyes had gleamed with tears, but when he'd asked if she needed to stop, she'd just kissed him. Again, and again. All through that first night he'd held her, and allowed himself to imagine that this was how every night for the rest of his life would be. And every night since then, he'd traced the scars down her back, silently swearing oath after oath that someday he'd go back to Endovir and rip that place down stone by stone.
Captain?
Kaol blinked, realizing someone had asked him a question, and shifted in his chair.
Say that again, he ordered, refusing to let himself blush.
Do we need extra guards at the carnival?
Hell, he didn't even know why they were asking that. Had there been some incident? If he asked, then they'd definitely know he hadn't been listening. He was spared from looking like a fool when someone knocked on the door to the small meeting room in the barracks, and then a golden head popped in. Just seeing her made him forget the world around them. Everyone in the room shifted to look at the door, and as she smiled, he fought the urge to smash in the faces of the guards who looked at her so appreciatively. These were his men, he told himself, and she was beautiful. And she scared them half to death. Of course they would look, and appreciate.
Captain, she said, remaining on the threshold.
There was color high on her cheeks that set her eyes sparkling, making him think of how she looked when they were tangled up with each other. She inclined her head toward the hall.
The king wants to see you.
He would have felt a jolt of nerves, would have started to think the worst, had he not caught that glimmer of mischief in her eyes. He stood from his seat, bowing his head to his men.
Decide amongst yourselves about the carnival and report back to me later, he said,
and quickly left the room. He kept a respectable distance until they rounded a corner into an empty hallway, and he stepped closer, needing to touch her.
Philippa and the servants are gone until dinner, she said huskily.
He ground his teeth at the effect her voice had on him, like someone dragging an invisible finger down his spine.
I've got meetings for the rest of the day,
he managed to say.
It was true. I've got another one in 20 minutes.
Which he'd surely be late for if he followed her, considering how long it would take to walk to her rooms. She paused, frowning at him. But his eyes drifted to the small wooden door just a few feet away. A broom closet. She followed his attention, and a slow smile spread across her face. She turned toward it, but he grabbed her hand, bringing her face close to hers.
You're going to have to be very quiet.
She reached the knob and opened the door, tugging him inside.
I have a feeling that I'm going to be telling you that in a few moments, she purred,
eyes gleaming with the challenge. Kaol's blood roared through him, and he followed her into the closet and wedged a broom beneath the handle.
A broom closet?
Nehemia said, grinning like a fiend.
Really?
Selena lay sprawled on Nehemia's bed and tossed a chocolate-covered raisin into her mouth.
I swear it on my life.
Nehemia leapt onto the mattress. Fleetfoot jumped up beside her and practically sat on Selena's face as she wagged her tail at the princess. Selena gently shoved the dog aside and smiled so broadly that her face hurt.
Who knew I'd been missing out on such fun?
And gods above, Kaol was... Well, she blushed to think about just how much she enjoyed him after her body had adjusted. Just the touch of his fingers on her skin could turn her into a feral beast.
I could have told you that, Nehemia said, reaching over Selena to grab a chocolate from the dish on the nightstand. Though I think the real question is, who would have guessed that the solemn captain of the guard could be so passionate?
She lay down beside Selena, also smiling.
I'm happy for you, my friend.
Selena smiled back. I think I'm happy for me, too. And she was. For the first time in years, she was truly happy. The feeling curled around every thought, a tendril of hope that grew with each breath. She was afraid to look at it for too long, as though acknowledging it would somehow cause it to disappear. Perhaps the world would never be perfect, perhaps some things would never be right, but maybe she stood a chance of finding her own sort of peace and freedom. She felt the shift in Nehemia before the princess even said a word, like a current in the air somehow chilled. Selena looked over to find Nehemia staring up at the ceiling.
What's wrong?
Nehemia ran a hand over her face, letting out a deep breath.
The king has asked me to speak to the rebel forces, to convince them to back down, or else he'll butcher them all.
He threatened to do that?
Not directly, but it was implied. At the end of the month, he's sending Parrington to the Duke's Keep in Morath. I don't doubt for one minute that he wants Parrington at the southern border so he can monitor things. Parrington is his right hand. So if the Duke decides the rebels need to be dealt with, he has permission to use whatever force is necessary to put them down.
Selena sat up, folding her legs beneath her.
So you're going back to Ilway?
Nehemia shook her head.
I don't know. I need to be here. There are things that I need to do here, in this castle and in this city. But I cannot abandon my people to another massacre.
Can your parents or your brothers deal with the rebels?
My brothers are too young and untried, and my parents have enough on their hands in Benjali.
The princess sat up, and Fleetfoot rested her head on Nehemia's lap, stretching out between them, and giving Selena a few kicks with her hind legs in the process.
I have grown up knowing the weight of my crown. When the king invaded Ilway all those years ago, I knew that I would someday have to make choices that would haunt me.
She cupped her forehead in a palm.
I didn't think it would be this hard. I cannot be in two places at once.
Selena's chest tightened, and she put a hand on Nehemia's back. No wonder Nehemia had been so slow about looking into the eye riddle. Shame colored her cheeks.
What will I do, Alentia, if he kills another 500 people? What will I do if he decides to set an example by butchering everyone in Calicalla? How can I turn my back on them?
Selena had no answer. She'd spent the week lost in thoughts of Kaol. Nehemia had spent her week trying to balance the fate of her kingdom. And Selena had clues littering the ground at her feet. Clues that might help Nehemia in her cause against the king, and a command from Elena that she'd practically ignored. Nehemia took her hand.
Promise me, she said, her dark eyes shining. Promise me that you'll help me free Ilway from him.
Ice shot through Selena's veins.
Free Ilway?
Promise me that you'll see my father's crown restored to him, that you'll see my people returned from Endovir and Calicalla.
I'm just an assassin.
Selena pulled her hand out of Nehemia's. And the kind of thing you're talking about, Nehemia. She got off the bed, trying to control her rapid heartbeat.
That would be madness. There is no other way. Ilway must be freed. And with you helping me, we could start to gather a host to—
No! Nehemia blinked, but Selena shook her head.
No,
she repeated. Not for all the world would I help you muster an army against him. Ilway has been hit hard by the king, but you barely got a taste of the kind of brutality he unleashed elsewhere. You raise a force against him and he'll butcher you. I won't be a part of that.
So what will you be a part of, Selena?
Nehemia stood, jostling Fleetfoot from her lap.
What will you stand for? Or will you only stand for yourself?
Her throat ached, but Selena forced the words out.
You have no idea what sort of things he can do to you, Nehemia. To your people.
He massacred 500 rebels and their families.
And he destroyed my entire kingdom.
You daydream about the power and honor of Terrasen's royal court, yet you don't realize what it means that the king was able to destroy them. They were the strongest court on the continent. They were the strongest court on any continent, and he killed them all. He had the element of surprise, Nehemia countered. And now he has an army that numbers in the millions. There is nothing that can be done. When will you say enough, Selena? What will make you stop running and face what is before you? If Endovir and the plight of my people cannot move you, what will? I am one person. One person chosen by Queen Elena. One person whose brow burned with a sacred mark on the day of that duel. One person who, despite the odds, is still breathing. Our paths crossed for a reason. If you are not God's blessed, then who is? This is ridiculous! This is folly! Folly? Folly to fight for what is right, for people who cannot stand up for themselves. You think soldiers are the worst he can send? Nehemia's tone softened. There are far darker things gathering on the horizon. My dreams have been filled with shadows and wings, the booming of wings soaring between mountain passes. And every scout and spy we send into the White Fang Mountains, into the Farian Gap, does not come back. Do you know what the people say in the valleys below? They say they can hear wings, too, riding the winds through the gap. I don't understand a word you're saying. But Selena had seen that thing outside the library. Nehemia stalked to her, grabbing her by the wrists. You do understand. When you look at him, you sense that there is a greater twisted power around him. How did such a man conquer so much of the continent so quickly? With military might alone? How is it that Terrasen's court fell so quickly, when its retainers had been trained for generations to be warriors? How did the most powerful court in the world get wiped out within a matter of days? You're tired and upset, Selena said as calmly as she could, trying not to think of how similar Nehemia's and Elena's words were. She shook off the princess's grip. Maybe we should talk about this later. I don't want to talk about this later. Fleetfoot whined, wedging herself between them. If we do not strike now, Nehemia went on, then whatever he is brewing will only grow more powerful, and then we will be beyond any chance of hope. There is no hope, Selena said. There is no hope in standing against him. Not now, not ever. That was a truth she'd slowly been realizing. If Nehemia and Elena were right about this mysterious power source, then how could they ever overthrow him? And I will not be a part of whatever plan you have. I will not help you get yourself killed and bring down even more innocent people in the process. You will not help because all you care about is yourself. And so what if I do? Selena splayed her arms. So what if I want to spend the rest of my life in peace? There can never be any peace, not while he reigns. When you said you weren't killing the men on his list, I thought you were finally taking a step toward making a stand. I thought that when the time came, I could count on you to help me start planning. I didn't realize that you were doing it just to keep your own conscience clean. Selena began storming toward the door. Nehemia clicked her tongue. I didn't realize that you're just a coward. Selena looked over her shoulder. Say that again. Nehemia didn't flinch. You're a coward. You are nothing more than a coward. Selena's fingers clenched into fists. When your people are lying dead around you, she hissed, don't come crying to me. She didn't give the princess the chance to reply before she stalked out of the room. Fleetfoot close on her heels.